Our regularly scheduled village board meeting on September 22nd. It's 7 o'clock, right on the head. They asked the clerk to take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Gatello?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Gillis? Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Ducey?
Here. If I can all ask you to stand.
Say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, what we got there? All right. Who's that? Okay. Okay, Margie Chicander? Fatal. Okay.
Margie Chicander, River Oaks Drive. Regarding tonight's board discussion on the Ethics Commission, closed session is not justified. Rather, it should be an open session. Why does the agenda omit the statute? Is this a new practice? On the audio, the ethics chair already stated the commission's recommendation. Why isn't the discussion tonight in public? The EC dismissed the potential conflict of interest complaint after initial review. The Ethics Commission shall include its reasoning in a written determination and in meeting minutes. Neither is available. This is Section 1-23-8 C6 of the River Forest Ethics Code. The new ethics code could have been rolled out to all covered individuals in the last 60 days since the approval. Switching to the September 9th EC meeting, Ethics Commission meeting to enter closed session, Village Attorney Molina during this meeting cites Open Meetings Act 5 ILCS 120 Section 1. Mr. Walsh clarified the sections as Sections 2C1, 2C3, and 2C4. One is to hear testimony on a complaint against what River Forest Ethics Code calls covered individuals. 2C3 is about the appointment, discipline, removal of an occupant, but the Ethics Commission lacks required power to appoint or remove an occupant. Section 2C4 is to hold a closed meeting, provided the public body prepares and makes public its determination in writing, which the EC hasn't done. Former Ethics Chair Peggy Daly was adamant on that only the Ethics Commissioners were to conduct an initial review of a complaint. The Ethics Code states, after initial review, and if there's a reasonable basis for the complaint, the EC may share the complaint with the Village Administrator, Village Attorney, Village President, Village Board. The EC dismissed the complaint. It doesn't need to share it. During revisions this past spring, the village attorney repeatedly requested he receive complaints immediately. The Ethics Commission decided against that to ensure confidentiality and anonymity. Why did the village deny my request to identify all attendees of the September 9th Ethics Commission meeting during initial roll call and for closed session? The attendees were first identified upon returning to open session. They were the two ethics commissioners, Mr. Walsh, Mr. Molina, and Mr. Masala. The denial suggests more than the two ethics commissioners attended the closed session. The village board needs to review its process for filing ethics complaints. The EC webpage directs complainants to file an online form or email ethics@vrf.us. Who receives these? The EC's intent was for complaints to go only to the EC chair, no one else. Complaints going through village software does not ensure confidentiality and anonymity. The EC's initial review occurred 21 business days after the August 8th complaint date. Code requires 10 business days without exception. The June 17th Ethics Commission meeting minutes are not posted nor reviewed for approval. Why? Lastly, The August 25th Village Board closed session added a discussion on setting a price for the sale or lease of village-owned property in violation of the Open Meetings Act per the Attorney General's FAQs dated December 2023, page 4, which partially reads, a public body may add a new topic for discussion to a regular meeting agenda solely to increase transparency. Two topics were to be discussed, running an hour and 43 minutes. A contract for the existing village administrator, likely not long, and a discussion limited by OMA to only price setting for the sale or lease of property owned by the village. This suggests a lengthy discussion occurred on only price setting. Or was more discussed outside the public's purview? Thank you.
Thank you, Margie. Bruce?
Bruce Phelan, 300 block of Franklin. I have some written words, and maybe I'll get an education after this. I have attended board meetings and talked to people, but raises some issues when I talk to people, so this is my words. I am a resident seeking accurately timely information about the issues affecting our community, village government, park district, and the township. While I receive clear updates from the school board and the library, I often find it difficult to get the same level of clarity from the village offices. In today's climate of misinformation, this is especially concerning. My number one question, village attorney's role. Do you represent the residents and village as a whole or primarily the board members? My understanding is your duty to protect the village and the residents from legal and financial consequences, not simply to test the limits of board initiatives. And can you clarify this? The board members, do you feel you receive enough background information before meetings to make well-informed decisions that affect the future of our community? And opportunities for resident education. The agenda includes time for public comment, but is there an opportunity for residents to be educated on upcoming issues before decisions are made? Term limits. Why have the term limits not been adopted or incorporated into the governing rules? And then as for development, Lake and Lathrop, who's responsible for demolishing the current structure so that a serious qualified developer can change the current landscape? What is the projected timeline and who bears this cost? Has anyone calculated the lost revenue from delays and how this shortfall will be addressed? And as for zoning information, what is the current zoning for Lake and Lathrop, Madison and Ashland, and the other properties in the village? I've asked and I haven't received any information. In closing, recently when residents raise questions, the tone of the meeting sometimes feels defensive rather than collaborative. We elect and appoint officials to serve the public. Open dialogue and straightforward answers to help build the trust of our community deserves. Thank you for taking the time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. And, all right. I mean, we'll probably talk more about this, Bruce, but I mean, there are, I mean, I hear what you said about timely information, and I'm hearing what you're saying about just general information and how you've contacted the staff. And that doesn't, I mean, I'm sorry that you felt that you didn't get response from the staff, but I know that they're very good at what they do, and they try to work diligently. And I know there's a lot of information that they produce. The weekly e-newsletter goes out, the monthly e-newsletter goes out. And there's a lot of web pages on our website that actually talks about term limits and specifically in Lake and Lathrop and other really good topics. So if there's something, maybe to your point, we need to educate you, not only you, but the public more about what is available. And we'll just keep working at it to make sure that we get as much information out in a timely manner that we can. So I hear you. And if you got anything specifically you'd like to suggest as a solution, please send it to Jessica and Matt, and then we'll try to look to implement whatever you think we're missing. So we take that very serious. So I appreciate you coming and telling us that. Okay, with that, I'll ask the elected officials' comments and announcements. If Erica, if that's okay, if we start with you first.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
I want to offer up a happy Rosh Hashanah and thank Megan, who celebrates, for being here tonight. As I understand it, it's one of the highest holidays. Mm-hmm. And so to be here on what I would presume is like Christmas, essentially, is a huge deal. So Shana Tova to you. And then I wanted to read a statement that I provided the Wednesday Journal earlier this week. So as a village trustee in River Forest, I'm deeply disturbed by recent incidents related to ICE activity in our area. On Thursday, September 11th, two of our River Forest residents were abducted by ICE and deported within 24 hours. The abrupt and concealed way this unfolded is profoundly troubling. It's also a clear reminder that River Forest is not immune from these actions. ICE and other federal agencies working on their behalf are active here, and we cannot ignore that reality. River Forest has a welcoming village resolution that makes clear our position. No village employee, official, or department may use our resources to ensure federal immigration laws or inquire into immigration status. Our policy affirms that all people, regardless of status, are welcome and safe here, and that the village will not participate in programs deputizing local agencies to act as ICE agents. These principles guide us today, and River Forest does not and will not stand with ICE. Immigrant families and individuals are not outsiders. They are our neighbors, our classmates, faith community members, people who contribute, whose work contributes to the life and well-being of our village, and they support our local businesses. They are an essential part of the fabric of River Forest, contributing to the vibrancy and strength of our community. When ICE or other agencies working on their behalf act here, they target our community members, and we must stand together to ensure everyone feels safe and protected. Residents also need to know what to do if they need assistance or see or suspect activity by ICE or agencies working on their behalf. First, the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant Rights, for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, or ICER, has a family support hotline number, and that's 855-435-7693. Please share that widely. Call this number to report ICE activity, get legal and social service referrals, and obtain deportation legal support. Second, if you witness ICE activity, write down important details: how many agents or vehicles are present, what actions they are taking, the exact location, what clothing or agency uniforms they are wearing, the time and date, and any equipment or weapons you see. Sharing clear and specific information like this helps community organizations respond quickly and accurately. As well, I encourage residents to join ICER's Illinois ICE Eyes on ICE text network at ICER.org. This is ICER's verified text alert system for ICE activity in our neighborhood. Network participants will receive real-time verified reports of ICE operations in their area so that they can stay informed and prepared. The day after two River Forest community members were abducted in River Forest by ICE, two additional horrifying ICE-related incidents occurred and continue to occur. In Franklin Park, Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, a 38-year-old father from McKinnon, was shot and killed during an attempted arrest by ICE agents. DHS initially claimed he resisted arrest and drove towards officers, dragging one with his vehicle. However, video and eyewitness accounts raised serious doubts about that narrative, suggesting that he was backing away. Mr. Villegas Gonzalez had completed a school drop-off, and his record shows only traffic violations from years ago rather than any violent offenses. A separate tragic event unfolded on Friday, September 12th at the Broadview ICE facility during a sustained 12-hour protest. From morning until evening, community members, faith leaders, and activists gathered to oppose these enforcement actions. Demonstrators tried to block transport vans, prayed and chalked messages such as "America was built by immigrants" and "Love thy neighbor," and chanted in solidarity. ICE agents emerged from the gates to push protesters back, fired pepper balls into the crowd, and issued dispersal orders over loudspeakers while threatening the use of less lethal weapons. One protester reported being thrown to the ground and injured, and these were not minor scuffles, and we continue to see that these are not minor scuffles. These are moments of violence that should never occur when people are exercising their First Amendment rights. The actions we saw in Broadview and Franklin Park demand full independent investigations. They are not acceptable in a democracy. And my deepest sympathy goes to Mr. Villegas Gonzalez's families and the protesters who have been harmed and all those carrying this grief and fear caused by these actions. They deserve truth, transparency, and justice. ICE must be held accountable for these abuses of power. River Forest must stand firm in its commitment to be a welcoming community. Our village cannot and will not be complicit. We must remain vigilant, prepared, and united in protecting the dignity, safety, and humanity of every person who visits, works, and calls River Forest home. That's my comments.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Rick?
Yes, thank you. Just to add what Trustee Bachner said, in Illinois, we do have two statutes, one that prohibits local police departments from cooperating and assisting the federal government in terms of immigration enforcement, and then two, also prohibiting local police departments from agreeing to, I believe they call it the 276G agreements, which is where the federal government deputizes local, state, and local police officers to act as a deputy of the federal government immigration ICE department. So we're prohibited in that way, yep, in terms of that until further notice, I guess, or litigation. So I just wanted people to know that as well for the record. So, but thank you with all your other comments, Trustee Bachner. The only other thing I would add is that I know a number of us attended the IML annual conference. I always find it beneficial. It was 2.5 days of a lot of workshops and topics that are always helpful for all municipal bodies. So I just want to share that, and I know a number of us attended that too. Yep. That's it. That's all right. I have.
Thanks, Trez.
Yep. I want to start by offering a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still is inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. A couple of comments. I want to amplify Erica's comments and sentiments and concerns. River Forest is a welcoming community, and that is also stated in our Maywood River Forest Twin Village Covenant, where River Forest states that it is fully vested to the principles of humanity, equity, and inclusion. It's alarming that we had the abduction of two River Forest residents and ICE operations in River Forest. It's also alarming that, as reported in the local paper, that ICE apparently denied abducting anyone from River Forest and operating in River Forest. And I understand that ICE did not alert our village police prior to being here, which creates a very dangerous situation for our residents and our police as well. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you. First, I would like to say happy birthday to my daughter, Audrey. Thank you for sharing your 10th birthday with our community. Tonight begins the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah. And to my fellow Jewish community members, I wish you L'Shana Tova, a good new year. This season is called the Days of Awe. It's marked by contemplation, reflection, and atonement for Jewish people. In the spirit of reflection, I'd like to take the opportunity to reflect on the state of our welcoming village. Though it's been mentioned, it bears repeating, two of our residents were forcibly taken off the streets of River Forest, abducted and removed from the United States while being deprived of the due process of law. Their neighbors bore witness to this loss, though ICE denies that people have been removed. They're undeniably gone. Through our 2017 Welcoming Village Ordinance, River Forest has acknowledged and reaffirmed the rights of all individuals, regardless of immigration status. The village conducts itself, along with all officials, employees, and uniformed services, according to the principles of equal, respectful, and dignified treatment for all individuals, and provides assistance and services to those in need without regard to immigration or refugee status, race, color, creed, religion, ancestry, national origin, age, sex, marital status, parental status, sexual orientation, gender identity, political ideology, physical or mental disability, homelessness, low income, or veteran status. We are resolved to River Forest's continuing commitment to equal, respectful, and dignified treatment of all people, regardless of their immigration status. We all belong in River Forest. Thank you to the neighbors who are working in big and small ways to support one another, to build networks, and extend helping hands. Your work matters. Your work is effective. I'll stand with you and for you and work to protect the civil rights of each person in our village and support the United States Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you very much. Erica, thanks for your comments. I think they're totally appropriate, but it also brings to mind that I think at this point in time, I would again ask village administrator, let's get our information on DEI out there. I mean, there's we spent a lot of money to have this done. There's items that we may come out of that those findings that help us get through the muddied waters that we're in today. So I'd ask you to have that pulled back together and let's get a final report on that, please.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Get our info. What did you want him to do?
The recap of the DEI report.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Bob. First of all, Happy New Year to our Jewish committee and happy birthday to your daughter. I, as mentioned by Brez, I attended the Illinois Municipal League conference for 2.5 days, and it's well attended by almost many of our municipalities throughout the state of Illinois, and it's germane to many of the things that we do around this table, you know, operations, finance, social issues that we just talked about. I mean, there are many topics that are discussed and shared with our colleagues across the state of Illinois. So I find it extremely helpful for me. So that's all I have to report at this moment. So we'll move on to our consent agenda. If I can get a motion and a second to approve item 5A through E.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through E.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions regarding any of those items? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to read out loud and then take each of the items and then take the vote.
Item 5A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, September 8th, 2025. B, monthly department reports. C, administration department report. D, change order, 2025 street improvement program, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $92,040.39. E, Lake Street Crossings, Safe Routes to School, grant funding resolution.
Okay.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cascatello?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Brockner?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to new business, which is the approval of the collective bargaining agreement. If I can get a motion and a second.
Motion to ratify the collective bargaining agreement with the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 151, and authorize the village administrator and director of public works and engineering to execute the contract pending attorney review.
Second.
Maybe we can get some highlights.
Sure. I'll just provide a brief overview of the proposed contract here. This is a 3-year contract that will
be retroactive back to May 1st, 2025. The Public Works contract expired at the end of April 2025. The primary change here with the bargaining unit is the nine members of the bargaining unit by the end, as a result of this contract, will now be on the village's healthcare plan as opposed to the union-funded health plan. And as a result of that, there are several provisions in there that we negotiated with the union to bring them over to the village plan, including the salaries of 5.5%, then 4%, and 4% over the life of the contract.
Yeah, so this was a big, I think, successful negotiation.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We are pleased, and I believe that the union is pleased with this, the results of this. It's a priority of ours to get the employees on our insurance for cost reasons and also administration reasons. So we think that this will be a great result moving forward. The other change of note would be the renaming of a title within the bargaining unit from crew leader to foreman, and also the consolidation of maintenance worker one and two to one maintenance worker position in the department.
Good. All right. Good work. All righty. Any comments? Questions? Okay. If we could take the vote, please.
Trustee Cascatello?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Thanks. And I just, on behalf of, I know the village board believes this, I know it's a lot of work to negotiate these types of contracts. So Jack and Jessica and Matt and whoever else was involved. Trish. Yeah, I don't see Trish.
Yeah, I didn't see.
So she's out of sight, Adam.
Oh, gee. Yeah. All sorts of kudos for her.
All sorts of kudos for her, and she's not here. But good work. This is not an easy task, so thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to executive session. If I can get a motion in a second.
Before we go to executive session, I wondered is it inappropriate to ask if we can address some of the comments by the resident about giving updates on regular updates on term limits in Lake and Lathrop?
I think I did. I think I addressed Bruce's. I think we give regular updates. It's on the website. It's on the newsletter. I think I said it. I mean, what else more would you like to add something?
Well, I guess addressing those two issues and his question about the village attorney's role, that should be an easy one to answer. But why not? I mean, those are two big topics that residents are talking about and want to know and are concerned about and are confused about. Why not include an update on term limits in Lake and Lathrop in every e-newsletter that we send out?
Which I'll answer. I mean, we can. It's just that sometimes there's not much to add. I mean, we can just repeat it every week. I mean, there's times like right now where we're not going to meet until October 12th on the, excuse me, it's 13th on the term limit. And then the next meeting for Lake and Lathrop, we've already put it out there. We've got an update more. The most recent update just happened this Friday. Yeah, and it was a really good update. So, I mean, we're happy to keep putting it in. I think we want to make it relevant and we want to make sure it's, if that's what the board wants.
Perhaps what we could do then is add a list of items that are of concern to residents that we know are of concern to residents and links to the areas on the website where they can find that information to the newsletter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we could keep.
And the contact is out on the website, correct?
Okay.
So there's everything that we're going to see and that we look at our bill support packages.
Yeah, and then I would
Not residents don't always know where to go. I mean, we know because we're on the board. We know exactly, you know, what's on our agenda and what we're going to be speaking about, and we know the whole history. But I don't think we can count on every resident to be following along with every update. It'd be nice. I like the idea of putting a list of the topics with links to the updates that are on the website. Maybe we don't have to have the update in actually every newsletter, but a link to it, I think, would be appropriate.
That would be, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it is, the term limits wasn't September 11th.
And if you feel
that Trump was recent, this past update. I'm not saying to just shut down any other forms of updating, but I just want to be clear.
I say noted and good, and let's keep that in every e-newsletter, because that seems to be what residents want to know about.
We need to make sure residents are signed up for the e-newsletter. So I don't know how we do that again. But
we do.
There's a lot of information out there. It's just if you want it, you have to just go and get it. So I don't know how much more we can do. So
I agree. I mean, we'll put more links out. We'll do more listings. I think the issue is just getting people to read the stuff on the website and in the newsletter. But we'll keep doing that. I think the administration does a really good job of trying to get the information out. We get a lot of good compliments. I know the administration does about what the amount of information that's out there. So sometimes it's missed and we get that. I'm offering to you, Bruce, or anybody else that you know, please come on into the Village Hall, and Matt and Jessica will meet with you personally, or anybody, and try to figure out maybe there's something more we can do, as Katie mentioned, and Megan, and we'll do it. I mean, there's no reason. We want to keep this information secret. I promise you that. We want to get it out. Maybe there's another format in which we can, as they mentioned, and we'll do it. Okay. Yeah, sure. Oh, no. With the term limit issue? Yeah, it's not about whether it passed. We're talking about how to proceed with the current way it was, the petitions were signed. And so without getting into it, we welcome you to come back on October 13th. We'll have a robust conversation on that meeting on Monday, and we'll get that, make sure that's in the newsletter, and we put it in the newspapers. We try to get it out because we want people to be engaged in that conversation, but it's not about it being approved. It's just about the legal aspect of a few things. So I welcome you to read to get into it. Like I said, just read it on the website too. There's some good information on our website as well. So, okay.
And then there was a question about the village attorney's role in representation.
You want to know about his role for us or for the residents?
I think the exact question was whether the village attorney represents the board or the residents.
Right. Like who do you do? Does the village attorney represent
your client?
The whole
yeah.
village?
Yeah.
So that my client is actually the village board, all the elected officials and the appointed staff that the elected officials mm-hmm. have put in place. It's not the residents. Except to the extent that the elected officials are the elected representatives for those residents. So my duty of loyalty is to the board. And that can include defending things that some board members don't like, depending on where the majority ends up on a given issue. But it's always to the board and the final decisions the board makes. I'm appointed by, under our form of government, appointed by the executive, the village president, with the advice and consent of the rest of the board. That's how the form of government is for our village.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer that?
Okay.
Thank you.
Does that answer it, Bruce?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. No worries. It's maybe misunderstood, but it wasn't purposeful. That's for sure. I'm sure these guys are really good at what they do. So I'm not sure they keep that information to themselves. So, okay, very good. Thank you for clarification. So let's go ahead and move on to a motion to go into executive session.
Okay. So I move to enter into an executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120(2)(c)(1) for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees. 2(c)(3), the performance of a or appointed public officer, and 2(c)(4), the evidence or testimony presented in an open hearing or in a closed hearing where specifically authorized to do so by law.
Second.
Okay. Okie dokie.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cascatello?
Yes.
And do I have to take it? And President Adusek?
Yeah.
Okay. Just a point of order. Are we going to be coming back into regular session afterwards?
Yes, the plan, and it's on the agenda that there's an action item that will be publicly discussed and voted on. So
When we adjourn the closed session, we will only be adjourning the closed session, not the meeting as a whole. We will be returning into open session.
Right. It's on your agenda.
Does that make sense?
What you're saying makes sense to me, but the way it's structured on the agenda is confusing to my eye. 9 is executive session. 9A is action based on executive session, which looks to me to be something done in executive session. And then 10 is adjournment. So it doesn't look to me from I'm seeing online that it's not, it doesn't look to me like we're coming back.
Oh, well, doesn't it normally say we're coming back?
Well, 9B says that we're adjourning executive session and returning to open session. 9B.
I'm looking online. And I don't see 9B.
Yeah, so Russ is reading off the action sheet, which Luke prepares to help with the motion.
I'm just looking to see what residents see. I'm following along the meeting, and it doesn't say that we come back.
Yeah, no,
it says, well, in the motion it did.
It wouldn't have to. Normally, you can't adjourn a meeting in closed session. The only time you can is when the motion to go into closed session includes that the adjournment of that will be the adjournment of the meeting so that the board is bound to adjourn. As far as what Trustee Brennan said about the way it's listed, it could have been listed better as a separate item. It makes it seem like it's a subsection of executive session. Executive session isn't required to be listed on any agenda. It's the item, the topic itself, where you're going to take action. So it could have been done clearer.
Okay, so just so residents know, we're coming back into regular session. Yeah,
it's absolutely clear. I mean, if there's concern, you know, that should be voiced. I mean, if there's concern about any issues raised about going into closed session, there have been statements made or about what the board's role is. I can talk about those now or later.
Well, I think this is, because it seems like Kate is a bit confused on how we go into executive session. We go into, have been doing this for years, going into executive session, unless it says that we are not coming back to open session. Always been that way. So
I'm not confused about that, Kathy.
Sorry.
I'm confused. I think that the way it's structured on the website the public notice looks like we go in executive session, we make an action based on executive session, and then we adjourn.
Yeah, I see what you're
saying. Okay. So normally what we would do there is just then
This is how it's been listed in the past when there's been action that's required on the agenda. I understand the comments, and we can re
it's been like
format that for future when there's expected action, but this has been the format used. This was used last month, including the discussion of my employment contract with the same subsection language. Moving forward, we can certainly reformat that to be more clear.
I think it'd be helpful because then people will know whether to stay on or stay around for when we come back.
We will work on that, although it does say action, so based on executive session. But if it needs to be clearer,
everything can always be clearer. Yeah. And then if there are any concerns about what the board's role is, if you remember this ordinance, the recommendation, the ordinance for the ethics commission itself said they're a recommending body only. And so somebody's got to finalize those recommendations. Yeah. And so this was queued up for the board in a way where we tried to get enough information so you knew what you were accepting or rejecting in the way of a recommendation without violating the purposes of trying to keep this as private as possible at the early stages. So that's why it's set up that way.
Is that okay? Is everyone good with that? Okay. All right. So I think we have a motion and a second. So we'll, we voted, right? So then we'll go into executive session.
Take a roll call. We're going into open session.
We just want to give it 1 minute.
Yeah, to let these people are out there.
Yeah, we'll just take a roll call. And then we'll wait. That. Yeah, we can go ahead and take the roll call.
Okay. So roll call to return to open session.
Yeah.
Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Cascatello?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Gillis? Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Juicy?
Here. Okay, so we've got, let's go ahead and take care of the motion to adopt the findings of Ethics Commission.
Motion to adopt the findings of the Ethics Commission's determining the complaint to be resolved with no further action and directing
the village administrator to distribute a summary memo and ordinance to all village covered individuals.
Second.
Vote.
So I'd like to add on to the providing the ethics information in the ordinance. And maybe we can note what are the steps that someone should take when they see that they need to recuse themselves. What does it look like exactly for them, mm-hmm. you know, for the steps to follow? And I'd say like before a meeting, so as they get a packet or as they come up against something. And for that would be another part of the memo. Yep.
Sure. So I can do that. I know the back when the village board had adopted the amended ordinance, there was direction provided by the board to share the ordinance with all members, which Ethics Commission kind of reiterated with the recommendation to the village board. So what I had prepared was a memo that was distributed to all village covered individuals that highlights the ethical standards, the conflict of interest and duty to report provisions. It does reference the fact that individuals should recuse themselves and cease deliberating as soon as they are aware of a conflict of interest. And if they have any questions, as soon as they are aware of any questions, to consult with either the village staff, village attorney, staff liaison, supervisor, if that's appropriate. So that direction has been shared with village covered individuals, including village staff. We are planning to redistribute that in a way that every village covered individual will be required to read and sign off on acknowledging having read and understood the ethics ordinance, and can include a little bit more specific direction regarding the when those actions should be taken as early as someone is aware of a potential conflict.
Yeah, and I would say just as, you know, plain English as possible, including everything.
So wait, I just want to make sure we're clear. That did you get the packet that Matt sent out to every board? Okay, and yes, in there, it's pretty.
I wouldn't say that.
No, what would you?
I think that we have a variety of commissioners coming from a variety of backgrounds. Not all of them are going to understand what was sent out. I understood it, but I do not think that it's necessarily going to be crystal clear to everyone who reads the ordinance language. I think some examples or a pattern of action, what a conflict of interest might look like in a hypothetical, and what you should do in that instance.
That's a good idea.
Because I just feel like we've got people coming from wide variety. Okay. We've got, you know.
Well, that's helpful, Megan.
Before it happens. Like, instead of being, you know, we legally provided, you know, what we needed to, you know.
Right. I mean, it's just kind of covered off in their orientation.
But I think, Megan, yes, to answer your question, it should, probably hasn't much. I don't know. I'm not in those orientations. But I think Megan probably brings up a good point. There's no examples, which I think does help people to understand what would be a conflict of interest.
One,
doesn't the IML have some?
Yeah, they have a book.
It would be specific to our village code, but we can actually share that.
Well, I mean, it'll give them an idea about basic conflicts of interest so they know at least to ask the question. Based on our ethics ordinance. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. But our motion is to distribute a summary memo, and the request is that the summary memo have some specific plain language examples. For example, you know, you can't, if you think you might have a conflict of interest and might have to recuse yourself, that means recusing yourself from the discussion as well as the vote.
Yeah.
That you might not be in the room.
Right. Very, very good point also. What do you do? Are you supposed to just sit there, or are you supposed to not be there physically?
But that brings up an interesting point for Lance.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here, and we're going to talk about something that I have a conflict with, okay? I recuse myself. I go sit there as resident River Forest. I still can't say anything?
That's another question. Do you leave the room?
Well, exactly.
Or do you sit there?
Erica said that. That's why I bring it up. I leave the room, or do I say, hey, I'm no longer a commissioner here. I'm a resident of River Forest, and I have an opinion.
Hmm. Right. You're getting into a gray area. So it's really a three-step process that we sort of teach when you have this kind of what I call a common law conflict. One, you have to announce the conflict. publicly. You have to say, I have this connection, I have this relationship, I'm in this line of work, and the applicant, you know, whatever, I'm personal friends with this person, whatever it is. And then you have to state that because of that, I'm going to recuse myself. Then you must not, then the second step is not participate in the debate. There's nothing about leaving the room. Yeah. I think you can get into a debate about whether someone's presence there can affect, or body language or whatever else, if someone really wants to be manipulative. But I think in many cases, people do leave because they just, you know, they're not trying to influence anything. But two, the question, to Trustee O'Connell's question, I'm still a resident. You mean I can't say anything? I think the point could be made validly, you can. Now, the question is, if someone were to feel like that were actually you participating in a debate, that could be the, you know, what a court would do is look at all these issues and decide whether, if the vote came out, it should be nullified. So it has to be done over, if it's a zoning approval or whatever. That's the reality. And the reality is, even when there are conflicts of interest that are handled kind of badly or they're not acknowledged, it's rare to nullify a decision. So it's really more a matter of best practices. So I would say that if you have, as a resident, you have you feel like you want to be able, I would say the better practice is to have someone else make your point, to make sure your point is made, another resident, you know. But is someone going to say you're violating the law by not leaving the room and saying, I'm speaking only as a resident now? I wouldn't do that. The First Amendment's stronger than that. But that's not to say someone couldn't claim that. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah.
So
I think the goal here is to, you know, avoid the gray area, you know, avoid the appearance of impropriety. So why would we want to push it?
Right. Right. And I mean, maybe, you know, there are hypotheticals or what about people, our commissioners, we know they're valuable volunteers. They all probably have important, you know, work that they do to make a living. Some of those lines of work are fodder for these potential conflicts. And so, you know, be aware if you're an electrician or if you're an architect and, you know, you're a valuable member maybe of a plan commission or a zoning board or the DRB, but you may have connections with people or possibly even a future contract, and you need to be aware of that. And if there's any confusion about what you should do, and even if there's no confusion, talk to staff, because sometimes people are ready to recuse themselves when they don't really. They're all worried about how something might look, and they it's not an issue. Like, oh, I can't vote on this variation. The person lives on my block, and I talk to him once in a while. Well, unless you have some deep connection to this and it affecting your own property where you think I'm biased about it, you don't have to recuse yourself, and you probably shouldn't if you can do a good job.
I think this is all very valuable information for our commissioners to have, so I'd love for them to be able to have some of the information that you're sharing with us now, because I'm not sure they will have considered it, or that they should come to staff, or that they can do that and get that mm-hmm. opinion prior to a meeting. It's very valuable to have that resource at their disposal, and even just reminding them of that, I think, is important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was one
that's documented, that sort mm-hmm. of documents these things, kind of like. Yeah.
They wanted the staff. The commission wanted staff to make sure that people are free and encouraged to call,
yeah,
just to talk about any right. potential problems. So,
and I would also ask that we, the board, when something like this comes to us again, that we have the opportunity to listen to the audio of the meeting that we're making a decision based on prior to having to make the decision.
Was the audio not available?
Was the audio of the meeting in question from the complaint was available. Any executive session would need to be listened to at Village Hall.
So it was available.
But that could be made available sooner.
So the meeting was September 9th, right?
Oh, the Ethics Commission meeting
yeah.
was on September 9th.
Right,
correct.
That's when they went.
Was it made available? When?
So
when was it made available?
Well, the open session,
the executive
session.
So let me just, as a policy matter for the closed session, it's been my advice that, you know, nowadays you can send copies of anything anywhere. And I believe that the safest thing is for there to only ever be one copy.
We agreed. Yeah. I think it should only be heard at Village Hall.
Yeah. So that when it's destroyed, we know it's destroyed.
And it's not altered.
Right.
So I'm asking, when was this available for the trustees to listen to?
The Village Board was provided with the information on the complaint over the weekend.
So this weekend.
Correct.
So what's the September 9th date, the August 8th dates? What are those dates?
September 9th was the Ethics Commission where they deliberated on the item. The August 8th date was the date that the complaint was originally filed.
So thank you. The reason I asked this question is when we had the conversation about the ethics debate and everything, and we talked about timeliness, I don't consider this timely.
You mean that?
I don't consider August 8th to September 9th being that timely.
It isn't. That's exactly what Margie said. It isn't. And that's another issue. It should be 10 days.
So we got to tighten that one up too.
But yeah, we do. I agree. Yeah, let's do one thing at a time. Yeah. We're talking about getting the audio out.
Yeah.
We didn't get the packet till Friday afternoon. And then there were additional pieces that came out on this over the weekend. I don't consider us to have been given an opportunity to have listened to the audio at Village Hall. You know, so what I'm asking is that in the future, before we're asked to discuss a matter, that we have a real opportunity to listen to the audio. And if the audio has to be listened to at Village Hall, all the more reason to give us more advanced time.
And nobody's disagreeing.
Different topic from yours.
Yeah, different topic. Valid. Same issue, but different. Yeah. But I just want to make sure we're clear. Okay, it was late, but it was offered to you, right? I just want to know.
No.
I did not specifically offer that. I shared the other documents to achieve that same result under the points taken, and I think future complaints will be handled.
And I think I emailed asking for it.
For this audio?
For the audio. I'll check.
Wait, could you send us that email?
That might be the case. I'm sorry if I missed it.
Oh, we need to see the email that she sent. And I think, we got to, if something gets wrong, we got to catch it. And Bob, your point is, I don't know what caused the 10 to 30 days.
There was a vacancy on the Ethics Commission during that period.
Okay.
So the acting ethics chair wanted to wait for the next appointee to be there. So that's what led to some of the delay there.
That's legitimate.
That's fine.
Very legitimate. Thank you.
So Matt, in the future, we would expect that timeline to be faster if there were another complaint.
Yeah.
Correct. The code that, it's 10 business days for that initial review to be held. And then there's separate language that initial review should be, the Ethics Commission should come to their ruling as quickly as possible. So yes, that would be the intention to be closer to that.
All right. Thank you, Matt. I know it's a lot. You guys are going with a fire hose here. And so you're doing a great job. It's just that there are things that we have to button up, and we know that.
Can we talk?
So,
go ahead.
No. Go ahead, Erica.
Because she was cutting me.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to do that. So the other item that I would like to bring up then too is just from a staff perspective. If we see something that's being put together in a packet and recognize, I think that's an opportunity for staff to maybe make a reach out to an appointee or whoever, you know, that there's a potential conflict of interest. And we've got the ethics information, the filing that we provide to the state. And then I don't know if we do right now, but we might want to ask for like what organizations or something like is someone with the tennis club comes to mind, right? And that way we're just more on top of it. And like, again, it doesn't get to a point.
Yeah, no, that you make a great point. And that is something that we want to make sure we ensure that we clear and understand. So, good point.
But I guess I don't disagree with that. I just think that maybe there's a form of training that will identify for all these issues that if you get a contract with someone, you got to look to see if, you know, somehow someone affected to
it. I'm not saying it is on staff to do it, but we, if we can make it, you know, if the staff sees something.
Oh, I agree with
that. Yeah, if you see
I'm just saying
that's how I saw
also put, you know, there's training out there for boards. And I think board members, commissioners have to take responsibility too to learn about conflicts and how to avoid them. So that's all I'm going to add.
Correct. And we certainly will make a concerted effort to catch any potential conflicts as they become apparent to us. Wish that it had become apparent to us sooner in this case, and maybe we're this conversation.
Where it's obvious staff does raise these issues ahead of time. You know, the tennis club comes to mind that we're to make sure.
Yeah, we've already sought some advice on that upcoming plan development.
But sometimes these things lurk, so you need the individuals to police yourselves.
It's got
to be a kind of a team effort.
Yeah, good points. Very good point.
So is can we also address some of the other questions that the resident asked about? I think more on this ethics complaint. Bob, you hit one of them which was the timing. So that was good. I tried to write them down quickly. They came quickly. One was that that I wrote down was only ethics commission members can view the complaint initially. I think that's what was said, and I don't know.
I think I can speak to that. Yeah. There was a question about who receives the initial complaint, and then there was a statement about Village being able to access that complaint. The form for ethics and the ethics email only go to the chair of the ethics commission. That is what's stated in the Village ordinance. There's also language in the Village ordinance about any individuals that were not given proper access to view that confidential complaint being in violation of the ordinance. And we would take that very seriously if any Village staff member or official were to reach out or try and interfere or access information on the ethics complaint. So that ethics complaint went directly to the ethics chair, who notified me and requested the information to take the steps necessary to begin that initial review.
Yeah, it was the email also. Thanks for remembering that. Yeah. Okay. And then I guess there was a question about whether the closed session for the ethics commission was justified.
Right. So that goes back. So the ethics commission believes that closed session to keep the anonymity and confidentiality is necessary to do this initial review. If it ever becomes public, any hearing, if notification to all parties was required, would be open. But this initial review, they feel, needs to be done in closed session, or it's pointless to have it be anonymous. The only way to do that is in closed session. So the best exception to go into closed session is to consider evidence. They are a quasi-judicial body when they sit that way, and to consider that. Now, they, in their view, and in my view, the ordinance's view, they are not a final determinator of anything. And that includes this dismissal issue. It should go no further. It's the board that's makes the final determination. And the board needs enough evidence to either accept or reject that recommendation. And so Matt and I, as Matt said, the confidentiality for anyone necessary to get enough information is going to be taken seriously, but you have to have enough information to make that call. And that is why I said it was okay to give you that information. And if the ethics commission could go into closed session to make sure that they were, you know, what do we do? Should this move forward or not? Then you must be able to, too, for that limited purpose.
Okay.
That's my analysis.
Thank you. And then I don't think I caught all of the items, but the last item that was asked about was our Village Board meeting. setting the, I guess it was, we went into executive session setting a price for sale, purchase of real estate only. And the question, I'm not sure that I captured the question correctly. You might remember better than I do, but my notes say she asked about only adding a new topic for transparency. We're only allowed to add it.
We went in also to discuss the contract of the village administrator.
Oh, it was added.
And that was it, yeah.
Okay.
And that's under, right. And then that's also setting a price on the real estate.
So, in my opinion, so there are two kinds of meetings you hold, special meetings and regular meetings. So for special meetings, any topic that's not listed on the agenda can't be discussed. Okay, so even if it's brought up, public brings it up as part of public comment, which you have to have at every meeting, we can't talk about it at all if it's a special meeting. Mm-hmm. For a regular meeting, anything's fair game that has to do with public business, as long as you can't, if it's not on the agenda, you can't take final action on it. You can discuss it to your heart's content and even give staff direction to bring back an ordinance or whatever. That's fine, even if it's not on the agenda at all. As to closed session does not have to be on the agenda as something that's going to happen legally. It doesn't need to be there at all. One trustee on a particular item that's on the agenda would say, you know, I'm not comfortable talking about this in open session. Is it legally possible to go into closed session? And then they might ask on the spot, and I could give an opinion. And if that trustee makes a motion supported by what the exception is and gets a second, and there's a voice and there's a roll call vote, we go into closed session. Doesn't have to be on the agenda at all. The reason it's put on agendas, like as it's planned as a closed session, is so the public knows. So they aren't left sitting there going, oh, I wish I would have known there was a closed session. I wouldn't have bothered coming, or I would have come later, or whatever it is. So it's done, I think, as a convenience, but it's not required.
Yeah, we've been doing it for a long
time. Right.
All right.
That's helpful.
Thank you.
I want to add to that, though. I think that, again, we're talking about the legality of something versus giving the public information that might be valuable to them on what we are discussing. And right. So for that reason, I think the question makes sense. And, you know, are we being transparent about what we're talking about versus the legality of
it? Sure.
So let me just we've been doing this for years, putting this on the executive session so that we could be transparent. We've never done it where, hey, let's go into executive session, not tell the public. I don't, in my 13 years, I've never done it, never seen it. At least I can't remember. Right. So, I mean, I agree with you, Erica. We would always do this to make sure that we tell the public what's going on.
Was it on the agenda, though? I know that was the meeting that.
Yeah.
There was
the phrase executive session was on there.
Yeah.
The executive session was on there.
Correct.
Right.
And it was for the contract, and it said for the development as well?
No.
No. Yeah.
Because there was no action, it didn't even say
to discuss his contract.
It didn't say to
because it's trustee O'Connor. Sorry to interrupt. There was an item on there listing for the approval of the employment contract because there was a plan for there to be action taken after executive session.
Yes.
Now there's been several times where we discuss things that are confidential, union negotiations, litigation, mm-hmm. other things that are included that don't have formal action, and those we don't list. We don't. We have not listed on the agenda.
Right. All right. I'd like to take the vote on this action, please. This motion. Okay. We're taking a vote right now. Okay. So let's, Rosa, please take the. Yeah. Yeah. Well, once we take the vote, we'll.
Okay. Vote on action based on executive session regarding ethics commission recommendation. Trustee Bochner.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cuscatello?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
So, we're okay. Let's take a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Cuscatello?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell? Yes. Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Thank you, guys. All right, good night. And Bob will can't be good.